Welcome back to the Women Who Roar podcast.
Today, I'm interviewing Mary Margaret Overby, a writer, speaker, mini blogger, and content creator with a focus on healthy relationships and intentional dating. In today's episode, we cover topics like how to be single with purpose, as well as how to date with purpose, the difference between connection and compatibility, common dating mistakes that lead to heartbreak, and breaking up with someone you never dated, which is a personal favorite of mine. Whether you're dating and waiting, going through a divorce, or have simply lost track of yourself in relationship, this episode is for you. Mary Margaret, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get chatting away.
I am too. So usually I start out by asking people, tell me about their toxic relationship history, but this is a unique conversation in that you have been blessed to not have a toxic relationship, and that probably speaks to your discernment as well. So we will start with a different question, and I just want to learn more about what inspired you to be someone who shares about dating, relationships, singleness, and all those good things.
Yeah, honestly, my own struggle is really the biggest inspiration behind it. I started dating really young in middle school. So 12, I think, is when I had my first crush. My mom dropped me off at the movies with a friend and we met two boys. And I think just from that time forward, I started dating and entered that sphere. And I realized that there weren't a lot of resources for women, and especially younger women, who were entertaining the idea of being in a relationship with someone. In a lot of ways, too young and too early. And even looking back at my own story, I wish I would have waited until I was an adult, honestly, at least, before I just jumped right in. But I used to joke that you can not to date someone, and she's probably not going to listen to you. But if you give her advice on how to go about it, she might actually take it and take the wisdom.
That's a really good perspective. So in your journey with your own experience, what was the point where you felt like, wow, I really need to share? What brought you to the point of feeling like you really needed to share? Because it sounds like you're jumping in at middle school. You're not really too introspective at that age.
No, definitely not. It was college, I think. Last year was really when I first started using social media as a tool to build a community and speak into that area. And I really felt, honestly, for me, it was the Lord just stirring this desire to help other women navigate some of the challenges and issues that I had faced and were seeing around me, honestly, because I think there's such a need for, how do we date wisely? How do we guard those relationships and guard our own hearts and lives well in time? Because when you date someone, it's such an investment of all of those. And so I think seeing a need for that around me, especially through college, and even for me, when I started writing, it was in a season when I was single, and I felt like it was the first time that I was really content in that and doing it well, honestly. And life's a roller coaster, so sometimes it can get challenging again, and we gotta have grace for ourselves. But when I first started writing and sharing with the world, it was from a place of actually not being in a relationship, but really wanting to help people navigate the challenges that come with it.
Yeah, I feel like our own experiences are the best inspiration a lot of times for those things. And I love that you talk about wanting to give women advice, because when I wrote my book, I realized that a lot of women were going through the same thing, but for whatever reason, we weren't talking about it. We talk about who we think is cute and how dates went and if we kissed on the date or not, but we don't really talk about the hard things in relationship, what's going wrong, the uncertainties that we have. So I love that you share about that. Now, I'm curious, a couple of things. One would be, what are some of the challenges and repeating issues that you saw around you that you wanted to speak into? And then you also said something really interesting that I've never heard anybody say on this podcast before: dating wisely. What is dating wisely to you? I love that, but I want to dig into that more.
Okay, the first thing, what are some of the things I saw around me?
Or in your own experience as well.
Or in my own experience.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, a lot of the issues I saw were really just people not labeling what they were doing. And by that, it's the whole situation thing that we have going on now where it's like, we're going to be in the talking stage for 3 weeks, but we're not actually going to say that we're going on dates even casually yet because we're not to that point. When I think it's actually healthier to call it what it is and to treat it as a date because it is, instead of texting someone for 2-3 weeks, actually go and get coffee with them and get to know them face to face. So you're not building this idea of someone in your head, but instead you're actually getting to know them for the real person that they are.
That's really smart.
So I think that was one thing I saw, was that I saw a lot of just unhealthy beginnings of relationships. And I think especially at the university that I've been attending, I saw a lot of women longing to get married, but in an unhealthy way, where they were putting so much stock in finding a guy that maybe they were settling in other areas or settling in the relationship itself just to get married. And that there's this unhealthy just idolization or this marriage idea being put on a pedestal when it's a beautiful thing and it's a great thing, but it's also not all there is to life, and that we can find so much joy and fulfillment also in being single, and contentment also in being single. So those were some of the initial that really spurred on why I started to write.
Yeah, I think those are huge issues in all different types of communities. So I really love that. You mentioned some things that would probably be examples of dating unwisely, and I do want to ask you more about why you think those are unwise. But I'm going to circle back for a minute to the dating wisely. How do you define that?
Dating wisely. I would say anything that's done with wisdom is done with purpose. And so figuring out why we're actually doing what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, every relationship is going to end in one of two ways. It's either going to end in heartbreak and a breakup, or it's going to end in marriage, or it's just going to end and maybe it's more neutral and you were really well guarded and you never fell for the person. But typically I say when you're very invested, there is some sort of grief and loss that goes along with it ending. And so I think dating wisely is knowing your purpose behind why you're doing it, and also just using discernment with who you're choosing to go out with, invest in, and also knowing where you are and what season of life that you're in as an individual, and saying, hey, am I healthy overall as a human right now? No, or were there other areas maybe I should prioritize before prioritizing finding a partner to do life with?
Yeah, I think that is a really wise, for lack of a better word. There's a lot of wisdom in that, because I think a lot of times we get caught up in dating people because they're cute and we want to be with somebody and that's it. And that's why we're going on a date. And I think women in general, I don't want to speak for every woman and I don't want to put too much gender labels on this, but I think women in general tend toward emotionally bonding just because they're going on a date with somebody and somebody's showing interest and they're cute and you had a good time, yes, which doesn't necessarily make the foundation of a healthy relationship. So how would someone go about defining their purpose in dating? Like, why would they be dating beyond that? Or if someone wanted to explore, why am I really dating somebody? What advice would you give them for figuring that out for themselves?
First, I would ask them just to journal that question themselves, honestly, because it's going to be different for every person, right? So if your why is, oh, I'm just dating to have a good time, okay, but you have to think about the consequences of your actions. What's going to come after that? What amount of hurt is going to come after that for both parties involved, or however many parties involved if you're casually dating lots of people? I think a great why to have is genuinely find that life partner, or to find your spouse, is to date for marriage without putting all this pressure on every date I go on, is this my spouse or not?
Yeah.
It's a healthy balance of dating intentionally, yet not being like, okay, on the first date, just having your interview and in pencil out and grilling the person.
I'm a little bit interview sometimes, so that's something that I'm working on. Oh, which is funny, because I'll go on dates with people who I'm like, I don't know that I say this long term, but you can't really make a decision without giving someone a chance. But then I still pull out the interview questions.
Yeah, which is good, because it's good to have those standards. I remember even from a young age, my mom told me, she was like, Mary Margaret, you need to have 5 things that you're not willing to compromise on when it comes to dating someone. And they can be any of your 5 things, but you need to pick 5 things that aren't ridiculous standards, but that are standards for yourself, just to have sort of a lens or a framework of what you're genuinely looking for in a person.
Yeah, which it definitely narrows down the dating pool a lot. I feel like people would be surprised once you define what you're looking for. It's harder to find people to go on dates with. But I like how you define it, because you said some things at the beginning that you didn't think were, you didn't exactly use the word wise, but you gave examples of people putting dating on a pedestal, not willing to be comfortable to being single. And I'm curious on hearing your perspective as to why you think those are damaging to relationship long term. Because I would say if you start a relationship just based on I want to be with somebody and really that's the main driving factor, and maybe you get along well, I think that does create issues down the road, even if you decide to stay with that person. But the insight that I would add before we go to your perspective on this is, I feel like what you've described in that is that our culture is really consumeristic, and we have that mindset to relationship, and relationships just really don't work with a consumer mindset. And I don't say that to judge anyone, because that seems something I work on in my own relationships, is whether it's romantic or not, is not thinking of other people as how are they going to meet my needs. But I think it actually creates a lot of relationship dissatisfaction for ourselves when we approach relationships from that place. But curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you were saying. The consumeristic mindset is so true, even with online dating now becoming huge as well. I think when we approach it more so with that mindset of how can I give to this person, instead of what can they do for me, or this is the end goal of XYZ. Do you fit? It can be taken to unhealthy extremes. It's about having that balance, so to speak. I don't know if that answered the question, but
it does. Yeah, I think my question that would build off that is, what are some of the problems in individuals and in relationships when, one, they have an unhealthy desire to be in relationship, and then also when they are, I think you had mentioned just these situationships just not starting with purpose.
So for people with that unhealthy desire to be in a relationship, generally, I think one of the main things that I see is that you take that pedestal idealistic mindset, and instead of viewing your partner through reality, you see them through a lens that you've created yourself, or rose-colored glasses, so to speak. And it's this fantasy, or it's a fantasy that you've created genuinely. And so instead of getting to know a person, you're more so viewing them through the lens of the idea of who you think that they are, which can be really unhealthy when you find out, once you get out of the honeymoon phase or whatever, that they're just a human as well. And I think that can be damaging in a lot of ways. I think one way that I see, especially with younger people and in college, sometimes if they get so invested into a newer dating relationship where they're very much so infatuated with the person, people confuse infatuation for love. And I think that's a huge issue, because initially when you start dating someone, the butterflies, you get all the butterflies, you get excited. It's a good thing, but it's also not a choice to stick with them and to stay committed to them. You still don't know the person, right? And I think our culture has confused love, and we use that phrase too loosely. And in some ways, I think that's incredibly damaging.
Yeah. And to that point, we have these mirror neurons, which are neurons that activate with familiarity, basically. And so I think sometimes we can also, if you've come from an unhealthy background, we can mistake something that feels familiar, which is often unhealthy, for love or chemistry. And it can create a really intense bond, but that doesn't mean that it's a really healthy bond.
Yeah, that's so interesting and so true.
Now, I really like that you talk about on your page, you talk about grief and you talk about loss when it comes to relationships, because I feel like people don't really talk about that too much when it comes to relationships. And maybe, again, that's a little bit of the consumer mindset. Oh, plenty of fish in the sea, just on to the next one. But I would like to hear more about your experience with grief and loss when it comes to relationships, and just what you want women to know about them.
Yeah, I think the biggest heartbreak that I've ever walked through was a couple years ago. It was after my freshman year of college. I fell head over heels in love for this guy, looking back, it was probably more infatuation now that I realize it. Yeah, I do think that I did really care for him. And at the end of the day, I actually did choose him in the end, even though it wasn't necessarily a healthy relationship. We had made plans for a future together. And about a couple months into our relationship, he's pulled the rug out from underneath me and pulled out on those commitments that he had made and left me very just broken, lost, and depressed, heartbroken in that place of just loss and grief. And I think it was in that time that the Lord really met me there. And my faith became my rock in that season, for sure, and the community around me. And so I think what I would want women just to know about that and about the grief and loss is that it's just so, it's real. And I think it can be so hard because sometimes we discredit the pain that we feel from a breakup because we feel like, oh, I don't have a terminal illness, or one of my family members hasn't passed away yet. I am in this hole of so much pain and I don't know how to get out. And so if someone's listening and they are in that place, I want them to know that to have grace for yourself, because that pain and that loss and that grief is very real, and the experience is raw and it's jarring because you have spent so much time investing in someone that you really care about and love, and to have that taken away, it's a very jarring is a great word to describe how it feels.
Well, I think it's also an indicator and a reflection that you have dated with purpose. I think it hurts more when you are dating because you are being very intentional about growing a relationship with somebody. You are planning, whether or not you sat down and talked about, we are going to get married or whatever, you have intentional plans for the future with them. I think you tend to feel grief come to the surface a lot more with that than you might feel with just, oh, we're just going to see where this goes and ends. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not just as painful when we're going to see where it goes and it ends. Just that I think it's easier to process a grief that came from something that was a little bit more intentional than something that wasn't. But I actually think it's very healthy to heal that grief. And so many women that I've talked to have said, it's a lot of times it feels like a death when you're breaking up with somebody because, and I don't want to say that with any disrespect towards people who have actually lost a loved one. I think that it is different. And I want to hold respect for that. But I think it can feel like that in the heat of the moment when you've lost someone that you really care about, because there aren't a lot of other types of relationship losses in life where you can't go back and rekindle some type of relationship. And most of the time in a healthy breakup, contact is, the cord is completely cut. And so it can really feel like a death. And I think it's a lot healthier for women to move through those emotions than just kind of stuff and on to the next one. I'm curious if you think that not addressing the grief can lead to potentially making poor choices in future relationships or having issues come up in future relationships.
Oh, it certainly does. I can even speak from my own experience in that. I think, like you said, the healthiest way is to address it and to give yourself permission to sit in it. And if you need to go to counseling, talk to someone else about it that can also sit in it with you, because there is such a need to healthily process it and give yourself the time and the space that you need to really fully heal. So like you said, you don't bring that into another relationship. Because I think often if we don't let ourselves sit in it and process it, it will come up, or it'll rear its ugly head in different forms, whether it be just anxiety or relationship anxiety in future relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say it looks like to be at the end point of healthily moving through a breakup grief? Because I remember when my toxic relationship ended, I was like, I spent all this time preparing and planning for a future with somebody. That means that I'm ready to do that with just somebody else, but the right somebody else. And that didn't happen. And I spent a lot of time doing inner work and healing. And I'm so glad that I did, because I wasn't ready to just jump into the same thing with somebody else. So what do you think it looks like to arrive at a healthy place with breakup grief?
I think a good indicator is when the person, your ex, is brought up, that it doesn't trigger anything. That you don't, I think if you hear their name, or if you see an Instagram post from them or whatever it is, if it doesn't trigger any sort of heartache or pain or jealousy, I think that's a really good sign that you've healthfully grieved and moved on from that person.
That's a good insight.
I think that's a good indicator.
Now, I have a unique question for you, being someone who doesn't feel like they've been in a toxic relationship, although it feels like with the one relationship you just mentioned, maybe you got a little love bombed. I don't know. Maybe there were some elements, but I can't speak to that. I don't know. But as someone who doesn't feel like they really have been in what you don't really identify with toxic relationship too much. What are some other reasons that a relationship could end? What are some good, healthy relationships for a relationship to end that doesn't mean we don't care about each other, doesn't mean there's something wrong with you? Because I feel like most of the women I interview on this podcast, obvious, glaring reasons for the relationship to end that most of us ignored much longer than we should have. So it's good to hear a healthier take on that.
Yeah, I bring that. Some reasons are genuinely just we're going in different directions. Genuinely, you're an incredible person, but I got a job offer in Georgia and you're living in New York and you don't want to move. And I really feel like I'm supposed to, but you're awesome. That's one very genuine reason. Another one is just incompatibility. Sometimes you meet a person and they check all your boxes or they fit sort of the standards that you have for who you would like to be with. Yet you still find out that for whatever reason, you're just incompatible. Maybe it's you, maybe you've had those conversations with them about your expectations and they've communicated well and you both communicated well, but it's still just not working. So I've experienced that before where he was an incredible guy. I really thought that it might've been it, but then the longer we spent together, the more we realized, no, this just really isn't a good fit. And it's not that he did anything wrong. It's not that I did anything wrong. It's just that we weren't necessarily compatible.
Those are all really good insights. How are you assessing compatibility?
How am I assessing compatibility?
Or how would you counsel women to assess compatibility?
I've never thought about that before. I think when you're looking for compatibility, you're looking for someone who you can communicate well and easily with, who you feel like you can be yourself with, and who you can fully be yourself around is really important. And I think that's a huge part of compatibility on both parties. And that sometimes, especially in the beginning of dating, you don't fully get to that place of being yourself sometimes because you're putting your best foot forward, or maybe you're trying to fit a mold in some ways. Yet after being with someone for a month or two, you really start to see, okay, this is who they truly are. This is what Mary Margaret is like cooking dinner on a Thursday night. Not face date night out. I think looking at how do you guys communicate? Can you have that honest and open communication easily? Does that come easily? Sense of humor. Does your sense of humor go along? That's not everything, but a lot of that goes back to communication and how you can interact with one another. And then also, do you feel like you can be yourself around that person? I think those are great indicators of a very like compatible relationship. And also just the overall health of it and noticing how you are functioning as an individual in the relationship. If you are constantly stressed or anxious and you don't know why and you don't think it's from external factors, but it's from the relationship itself, it might be an indicator that something isn't working, right?
Yeah. I ask that question because I think connection and compatibility are not the same thing. And I think a lot of times we confuse connection for compatibility. Like when I think back on my big unhealthy relationship, phenomenal connection, could definitely be myself. In many ways, it was like, oh, we thought the same thing about everything, really similar sense of humor. But when you're thinking about things like major core values, that wasn't compatible. How we would want to raise children wasn't compatible. And obviously, please don't pull out the how do you want to raise your children question at the first date, or even maybe the second date, unless your first date was really good. But I think it's important to think about sometimes what is connection versus what is compatibility. And I think it's really wise that you talk about assessing compatibility in relationship.
And that's why it's also important to know where you stand as an individual on all of those things. If you're in the dating pool and you're genuinely dating to find a partner, you as an individual should be thinking, okay, what do I believe about God? What do I believe about politics? What do I believe about family? What do I value? And does this person align with those things? And dating, especially at the beginning phases of it, you are data collecting, right? You are assessing. You're data collecting. That's what you're doing. You're interviewing in some ways. Yeah, there's a lot more, like you said, even there's so much more connection that goes with it, but it is that compatibility factor of those core things. And I think it can go, it's funny because it honestly, I think issues with relationships and why it can end can go either way. Sometimes you can be so compatible with someone, you align on all of these thought processes, but yet you don't have that connection with at all. You get point. Sometimes you might have this, oh my gosh, we have this fiery connection. We're on opposite ends of political spectrum, or I'm a Christian and he's an atheist or whatever. Something that you need to think about.
And I think that goes back to what you said, knowing what's important to you, what you don't want to compromise on. Because I think for some people, they might not really care if they're on opposite ends of the political spectrum or be okay with interfaith. So I think some of those deeper issues, we don't always think through, okay, maybe we don't care if we're on opposite ends of the political spectrum until we're trying to raise a kid together and we have different ideas. So it's definitely important to think through those. But also, okay, I can tolerate this, but I really don't want to tolerate that. That definitely informs how you process the data that you're collecting in the dating space.
And also finances are a huge deal. I'm pretty sure it's 50% of divorces happen because of financial issues.
Wow.
And being able to think through that is huge. If you're considering marriage with someone, if you're considering a serious future with someone, knowing how much debt they're in. Obviously, these are questions that come later and they're asked on a first date, but knowing like, how or if they're responsible in there, how do they handle their payments? How do they interact with money? What's their history with it? Like just being aware of that and having a plan going into it is also something that's very important. And I think a lot of people overlook that.
Yeah, I think that's really wise advice. Now, if you break up with somebody, let's say you're not compatible or a connection's not there, whatever. What do you think the best thing to do in a breakup season is? You did talk about feeling the emotions, but what would an intentional breakup look like?
The first thing, and you already touched on this, but I would say just setting healthy boundaries with the person you're breaking up with is huge. And I think if you can have the boundary conversation moving forward within the breakup conversation, that's best. I remember I've had a breakup conversation with a guy before where I said, okay, listen, I'm going to delete our Instagram photos right now because I don't want shit. Like, I want us just to do it right now because I don't want to have to stress about checking my phone in 2 weeks and seeing that you've done it before me or whatever. Like, I see it be clean. And this, just the stress that comes with that and how to navigate that. And so I think having a clean break, and by that, I mean cutting communication completely from that person to the degree that you need to heal, I think is very important. And I also think that can look like taking a break from social media if that's needed. I know there have been seasons where I've gone through a breakup where I'm like, I just need to get off of it. I don't want to risk seeing this person. I just want to give myself space and give myself that time to heal. I think that can be a huge thing that we also often overlook. And I think that's an element of a clean break, is setting whatever healthy boundaries that you need, even if you might not necessarily want to set them, but setting them and having accountability and close friends as well that are going to check in on you and that are going to make sure that you're not contacting your ex or that he's not contacting you, and that's not possible if it's not healthy, especially.
Yeah. Beyond a clean break, I feel like breakup seasons can be times to really get to know yourself, to redefine what went wrong. What do I want to do differently in the future? So what are your thoughts on directing your, once you put your boundaries around your ex, growing with yourself, healing with yourself in a breakup season? What do you think about that?
And yeah, I think journaling is an awesome thing to take up if you're going through a breakup, especially because it can help you untangle everything that's going on inside your head and your heart and kind of put words to some of the emotions or experiences that you just walked through. So I highly encourage journaling. And if you're a Christian, journaling those prayers to the Lord and sitting in them and letting the Lord sit in them with you can be really healing. I also think just taking care of your personal health and taking care of your body is really important, because I know for a fact that when I don't feel good, everything else is also good, even if it's physical, right? Because we're holistic beings. So we're all connected. Every part of us is connected. And if your heart is really hurting, then prioritize your physical health right now. Go on a walk, go on a run, or find things that bring you joy that are also healthy and taking care of your body. I think that's huge. I know for me, when I've gone through breakups, I've taken up running. I'm a runner now because I took up running. Yeah, it's hilarious because it's something that I started doing after a breakup. And so now I still enjoy running and walking, but it's great exercise. And also it's a good distraction and it's a healthy coping mechanism and it's taking care of yourself and just giving you also something good to do.
Yeah. Journaling is awesome. There's studies showing that journaling helps with grief. There is a study done on HIV patients where it boosted their immunity just because it's so stress relieving. So journaling is amazing. And then I like how you talk about finding joy, because the grief community will talk about micro joys, which are like little things that spark happiness in a season you're really sad. And that really helped me when I was going through a lot of grief. I was in medical school and I was very frugal. And I was near the end of it and I was thinking, okay, I'm just in a place in my life now where if I need to buy a $4 bouquet of flowers, or if this little bar of soap makes me happy, I'm going to get it. Yeah, that doesn't mean I'm like going on a rebound trip to Paris that I can't afford. And that wouldn't be a micro joy. That'd be like a macro joy. You're looking for just little things that you can lean into in that season to bring joy back into your life.
Yeah. And even if you can do something like that every day, just finding something little that brings you joy. It's so important. And I think it's a good way to also just keep your heart softened and not let it not grow just so hard and just so sad, but just find those little things, whether it's even just like the sunset, it's beautiful, or spending time with people you love. I think community is another huge thing during a breakup season. Pull your friends really close and your family and those loved ones around you, and just enjoy that fellowship and that friendship that you still get to cherish and have.
Yeah, community is huge. If you look at the neuroscience of grief, dopamine and oxytocin will drop after you have some type of relationship loss. And then our brains produce cortisol, our stress hormone, to try and motivate us to seek out help. So it puts us like in this stress state to try and get us to seek out help. And if we do, usually that comes in the form of community. And then that helps bring the oxytocin and the dopamine back up. And it keeps the grief from becoming like a chronic stress event. But we don't pull community, then the cortisol stays high and it moves us into like chronic fight or flight or chronic stress. And so it's just really cool that our bodies are designed that way. It just underscores what we intuitively know, that we are hardwired to lean on other types of relationships when we're going through a relationship loss.
That's so interesting. Yeah, that's so true.
The one thing that I picked up is you noted, or you mentioned a couple times about different relationships that you thought, I thought this was maybe it, and then it wasn't. And I feel like when women go through that a few times, even one time, it's easy to slip into a mindset of something's wrong with me because I keep getting this close to marriage, or my forever partner, my person, why can't I find that? But you sound like you really handled those situations in a very grounded way. So what's your perspective on that, and how you don't fall into the rabbit hole of something's wrong with me just because these relationships aren't working out?
I think I have fallen into the rabbit hole. I think it's hard to, especially I'm in a season where a lot of people around me are getting married, and it's hard to not question like, oh, have I done something wrong? But I think it's just knowing that those people weren't right, and trusting that conviction and discernment that I had just in my intuition, honestly, as well as seeing all the other signs and flags. I think we like to look back on relationships and only remember the good sometimes. But it's also looking back and being honest with ourselves and saying we had some really good times, but also we faced a lot of hardship, or we had a lot of issues, and this is why it didn't work out. And so I think remembering that I'm not the problem. No, it's a compatibility issue, or it was whatever. It didn't work out. And knowing that my identity is not rooted in a relationship working out or becoming someone's wife, and recognizing that's not where my self-worth is found. It's not in being someone else's partner, which can be so hard because I feel like we do tie a lot of identity and that unintentionally. And I think there's a lot of pride that comes into good and bad pride. I'm proud of the person I'm with, which is in a way can be loving, but bad pride of it, if it becomes too much, then it's like, I am the person I'm with, or I identify as being with the person I'm with, which can be not a good thing.
I think that also just reflects maturity in you. And I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning about not settling. And I think a lot of people do settle, actually, sadly, when they get married. I think divorce rates would speak to that. I think a lot of times people are just want to be with somebody more than, and maybe they don't even know, maybe they don't have the tools, like some of the things we're talking about, to assess compatibility, connection, what do I really want? And I think often people are settling just to be with somebody.
Yeah.
On that note, one thing that I really love that you talk about is being intentionally single. I don't feel like a lot of people talk about that. And I want to hear from you what you think that means. And some new, I feel like there's nuance to that, because I think there's intentionally single in, I don't need a man to make me happy. All I need is my career and my dog. And I've definitely been in that space before, so I'm not judging anybody at all. But I think there is a different type of softness to saying, this is something that I would actually really welcome in my life, that would really benefit my life. But just because it's there doesn't mean anything is missing. And actually, maybe there's something in this season for me to look at and to benefit from. What are your thoughts on, how would you define being intentionally single? What are your thoughts on that?
First, to be intentionally single is just to be fully present in the season that you're in and not compare even where you want to be or where you were with where you are right now. Because I think it's really easy to compare what it's like to be in a relationship, or what we think it's like to be in a relationship, for like when we're single, to being single. And that can be really damaging, because then it's honestly just hard to be content with the life that we currently have, if we're always longing for something that hasn't come to us yet, which is honestly when I think people settle the most, is when they're longing for something so badly because they're so discontent. So I think being intentional first looks like being present, and also just focusing on where I am and what I feel like is in front of me right now, and how I can step into fullness of life with, whether it be my career or my friends or what I feel like the Lord's leading me to do, or my family, or where the need is that I can meet presently where I'm at. And I think you can find so much joy in that season. And it doesn't mean that it's easy. Like, it doesn't mean that being single is necessarily easy. It can be so just formative in who you are as an individual. It can be incredibly healing. Like you touched on earlier, you can use the season to really just focus on yourself and focus on your relationships with others and how you relate to yourself and heal those areas that need attention and work. And it can just be a time of purpose. It doesn't have to be just this holding period or jail cell before the right person comes.
Yeah. So finding fullness of life in that season. What are some good ways to do that?
I think, like I talked about, just one, being present. I think we take for granted what it's like every single day to actually be present with those around us and to look at the opportunities around us. And I think when we start to see those little moments of joy in our everyday and in the present around us, that's living intentionally, living on mission, and not just being so set on an idea of something that we're letting the present just slip through our fingers.
Yeah. I think presence is sometimes challenging when people are in a single season, because if you're present, then it also brings up your discomfort and you have to work through that. Oh, I feel really sad. I'm the only one here without a spouse or whatever, without a significant other. And that can sometimes be really sad and uncomfortable. But I think leaning into the joys is really important too. I feel like when I started getting healthier, before I was healthy, it would be like, I'd be imagining what the situation would be like if my ex was there, or maybe next year it'll look like this. And then when I got healthier, there would still be times when I'd feel like this is hard, but I would know how to, oftentimes, let's say a big event was coming up that I know this might be a little challenging given my relationship history. I'm going to prepare for it in counseling. I'm going to make a plan for if something difficult comes up, and then I'm going to try to enjoy it. But as I got healthier, honestly, it really became easier. Like, I would have events where I just enjoyed it. Was it thinking, oh, this would be so much better with a spouse or a boyfriend or whatever? That's not reality, but it's nice how it is right now.
Yeah.
So I think presence brings you to that. And I would also say, I think investing in yourself is important. If financially. And I don't mean necessarily growing your portfolio, though I do think that's important as a single woman, but I used to come from this kind of scarcity mindset, and anything that wasn't absolutely necessary felt. And I think when I moved into a place where I was trying to cultivate fullness of life, it wasn't living beyond my means, but it was looking at, do I want to wait until a boyfriend comes along for me to feel like I should have nice skin? No, I don't. I don't need to wait for somebody to give me permission to live life in this way. I'm going to start pursuing life that's interesting to me. And that's an investment in myself. And so I think that's another way that we can step into fullness of life, like you were talking about.
Absolutely. It's giving ourselves permission to live independently and to have fun on our own. I'm going to take myself out to dinner tonight. Just me. Yeah, it's fun. And it's okay. And learning how to feel comfortable and confident in our own skin is so important in those seasons. I completely agree.
I feel like we have to learn to like ourselves too. You said something that just reminded me that sometimes maybe we're uncomfortable because we just don't really love ourselves. And that's something also to really work through in an intentionally single season.
Yeah, I completely agree of just figuring out who we are, just in what we like. Sometimes, especially with women that have dated people for long amounts of time, whether it be a year or 2 years, you're coming out of that and you've grown with this person for a set amount of time. And so you're back on your own 2 feet, and this is a good time for you to figure out, okay, what movies do you enjoy watching that you don't have to compromise with someone else? And what food do you really like? In what ways has this person sort of shaped your growth? Some good, some bad, probably. And yet figure out again who really you are.
Yeah, I do notice that in single seasons for me, just discovering things that I would have never had permission, which is more of a toxic dynamic to enjoy before. But even if you're not in a toxic relationship, maybe you just didn't have the space in life to be able to explore some that interest or whatever.
Insecurity as well. That can be a huge thing that holds us back, especially when we're dating someone of, oh, what would they think if, or yeah, how, or I don't want it to come across this way. That sort of fear can also be a driving factor of why you might not normally do something that you would do if you were single.
Yeah. Another thing that I love that you talk about, I actually don't think I've ever heard anyone else talk about this, breaking up with somebody that you never dated. And I just love, love, love that you shared that, because let's be honest, women, that happens. So what does that mean? And just tell me your thoughts on that, your tips for that.
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever heard the saying, if it walks like a duck and it sounds like a duck and it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck?
Yeah,
I think the same thing is true for those sort of relationships, friendships, situationships, whatever you want to call them, that technically never become an actual official dating relationship. If it looks like a relationship and you're talking to them like it's a relationship and you're investing time in them, it's a relationship, but it's not. We're just friends. Mm-hmm. Really, it's a relationship, because that amount of intentionality, that amount of time that you're investing in someone, is it's going somewhere and you're building that connection with that person. So whether you have a label or not, you're still building a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And I think when that ends, whether it's your choice or their choice, sometimes it can be even more painful than an actual breakup, because you're grieving something that never fully came to pass.
Yeah.
And you're left with all these questions of what would have happened if we actually did end up together. Would we actually have been good together? Or if they choose to end it, then you feel led on, because you're like, I thought this guy was so into me. Why did he just pull away like that?
Yeah.
And this is even, I think it's more true when, at least I've noticed, like in the college sort of sphere of things, I'm in grad school now, but still in that kind of environment. I noticed this, it's really bad when people aren't going on dates, but they're hanging out or they're in a talking phase, which looks like basically it's like going on dates, or it's like hanging out in friend groups, but the two of them couple up all the time in the friend group. And yet neither of them are ready to take on that title of relationship, or maybe one of them isn't ready to take on that title of relationship. So essentially you're doing everything within a relationship without the commitment and safety that a relationship offers.
Yeah, that's a really good insight. And it's almost like you said, it was a relationship, but without that title, it's almost like you're being gaslit into it. This didn't really happen, even though it did.
You gaslight yourself with that.
Yeah. The other thing that I would tack on to this too, and then I want to hear your thoughts on just handling the grief from that, if there's any unique insights. The other thing that I think sometimes happens with women is women will be like, this guy has this and this and this and this quality. He's perfect. He's got to be the one. And maybe he doesn't even know you exist. And then it can build. Women can be under this, I shouldn't call it a delusion, but it can get to that point for a while that like, one day this person's going to recognize that we were meant to be together. And as you get healthier, you come to a point where you realize, no, it's not going to happen. And I think there's a little bit of that has a little bit of similar overlap with what you were talking about, grieving a relationship that wasn't a relationship. That's maybe more in the rejection spectrum of somebody not picking you. But I think women can let things like that grow into their head and kind of be convinced that somebody is going to be in a relationship with them one day and it just never materializes.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's such an issue. It's like living in fantasy instead of living in reality, because it's like this delusion or, so to speak, this idea of someone that you've built up in your head isn't actually who they are, which is why even just texting someone for a long amount of time before actually meeting them, or if you're doing online dating or getting to know someone long distance can be challenging. Getting to know someone over through a phone can be really difficult because, again, it's that same idea of you're building up an idea of a person without actually getting to spend time with them, or it's just the answers that they're giving you through a text message, which can be interpreted so many different ways, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important to just remain grounded as you're in that initial season of data collecting, right? We need to remember that, ladies, when we start dating, we're data collecting. We don't know if he's French charming or not yet. We are just simply analyzing, collecting data, getting to know someone, and how wrong we can be. I think it's really humbling when we think that about a guy. And I know I've experienced it when I think that about a guy, and then I realize a couple years later, I'm very thankful I didn't end up completely wrong. And just recognizing that we are human, we have misjudgments, and also just do not put so much weight into a fantasy. Don't let yourself do it. Have those mental boundaries and try not to build that delusion, but instead say, this is how much I know about this person, and I'm building them up to be this in my head, but I'm going to just take a chill pill and look at the actual facts and try to view it through a lens of reality and what's actually happening and how much I actually know them.
I think one thing that's really grounding at that stage too is to remember that who somebody is not who you think they are, the fantasy in your head. It's not even who they tell you that they are. It's who their actions say that they are. And I wish that's a lesson I don't look back and have regrets, but it is something that I wish I would have learned sooner and that I write about in my book. Had someone telling me that he was going to be this and this, what, and that was everything that I wanted, and he was going to marry me, and he was going to do all of these grand gesture promises, blah, blah, blah. But his actions were telling me for years he wasn't. And that's what he really wanted, was what his actions said. It doesn't matter what he was saying with his mouth. It doesn't matter the potential I saw. Actions are what tells you who somebody truly is. And I think that's something really important to pay attention to in the initial stages when it's easy to get swept off your feet.
Yeah. And I would even add to that, that during the initial stages, their actions are probably going to be great. It's more so after a couple months in, when you really need to start looking and seeing. And because I think for me, I've dated some guys that have showed up like Prince Charming initially, and then we get a couple months in, or I officially become his girlfriend, and then he treats me differently. So then you're like, oh, I thought you were this and this, or he pursued me so well, he was so into me, and now he's not interested, or he's not willing to prioritize me over his friend group or whatever. I think making sure that not only do their actions match their words, but there also should be longevity in that commitment, right? And I think also noticing too what he's willing to say up front and what he's willing to promise up front is a huge sign of maturity. And I remember too, when I was less, I always wanted guys to promise more up front, or I wanted that extra affirmation, or yeah, we should go on that trip there around Christmas or whatever. Yeah, should do this or do that, like far on down the road. Let's do it. I love that because it's, oh my gosh, he sees me staying that far down the road. in reality, that's actually immature to promise something like that when you're just getting to know someone, because you don't know where you're going to be in that season. Anything could happen. And so I think also looking for a guy who's not love bombing and who's not over promising too soon or prematurely, because that is a sign of immaturity, because he's not going to be able to actually hold to those promises and to what he's saying he's going to do.
Yeah, I think the longevity piece is really important. And I think you also brought up something that I think there are some actions that it takes some practice to identify, but I think you can identify some actions early on, like you mentioned. Are they being too grand? Are they promising too much? Are their actions just too good to be true? Because that's also a red flag. I remember this one guy I was talking to, and he made a joke about kids. And at first, I was like, okay, it's a cute icebreaker. And then he kept saying, like, when we have kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're not even taking me on a date yet. Like, this is a major red flag on me. You have no idea if I'm someone you'd want to have kids with. And I think also looking at, okay, they might say one thing and they might be love bombing everybody in your circle, but what does their circle look like? Do they have other relationships with longevity that align with the actions and who they're saying they are? Or do they have some story for why they don't have that? So I think you can spot some of those things. Does their life align outside of its intersection with yours to what they're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And another good thing to look for, too, is how do they treat people that technically can't give them anything or can't do anything for them? How do they treat people? How do they just treat random people like strangers that they encounter day to day? Because looking for those intentional acts of kindness is just so important, and seeing how they interact with people and people that can't do anything, because for you, you are their person, right? Or you're the person that they're trying to impress or trying to sell themselves in some way of, this is who I am. Like, this is my best date self. Like, me. And so seeing how they interact with people, like the waiters, are they kind? Because at that point, if you were to end up with them years down the road, when you're not special, this new shiny thing in their life anymore, are they still going to cherish you? Are they still going to be kind to you? Are they still going to treat you in a way of respect? And I think a good indicator of that is how do they interact with the world around them?
Yeah, that's a really good. So for people who are grieving or didn't have all of these good pointers ahead of time and are grieving a relationship that didn't happen, what is your best advice on that?
For grieving a relationship that didn't happen, I think just have grace for yourself. Know you're not crazy. I think we get in our heads a lot after stepping out of something like that, because there wasn't the label. We think, oh my goodness, I don't have a place to feel these emotions. And that's just not true, because the thing you experienced was very real and the emotions you felt were real, regardless of if there was a title or not. And I think giving yourself space to sit in that and to recognize that it was a breakup. At the end of the day, you had to say goodbye to someone, whether you had an official title or not. It's still that same similar grief. And it can vary based on how even deep the friendship was, right?
Yeah.
And know that you're doing the right thing. If you cut it off, that's really healthy, because it's not healthy to have a person in your life that's not willing to commit. Or if you're not willing to commit, that's not healthy to let it continue on. And you want to either make space for you to find someone that's going to treat you better, and same for the other person. Whatever thing it is that's either holding them back or holding you back is not worth continually investing time in something if they're not willing to commit.
Yeah. You have so much wisdom and lots of maturity, and I feel like you are very inspirational in hearing you talk, because it's really encouraging to hear that there's women out there like you who are taking such a healthy approach. So I'm sure you'll definitely, actually, I don't know what your relationship status is, but I'm sure in the long term, you will definitely find somebody really healthy and who is worth the wait. Any parting words that you want people to know on dating or relationships? And if not, just where they can find you?
Any parting words? I think one of the best pieces of advice I would give too is just take the pressure off yourself and try to enjoy it.
Yeah.
We put so much pressure on dating and trying to find the right person. And I say, just treat other people the way you would like to be treated. It's really that simple. Communicate in the way that you would like to be communicated with, and have honest intention, and just take the pressure off and try to be present where you are and with those around you. And like we said earlier, just finding joy in the small things.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. I like the presence piece a lot. And I think also being of the mindset that what is meant to happen for you, sometimes we have to take practical steps toward that. And that's not something to hide behind, but also being able to rest in that and be in the present moment and not always be shopping, so to speak, on the meat markets or whatever. So where can people find you if they'd want to follow you for more of your insights?
Yes. Okay. So I'll send you as well. I have a free singleness prayer guide, and I also have a compatibility. I made like a compatibility sort of quiz that you can do if you're dating someone and you're trying to figure out where you guys stand.
I'll link those. That's so funny. I was thinking in our conversation, we need to have a compatibility quiz or something. So there we go.
Have one. I already have one. Yeah. Perfect. So we can link those in the show notes. And you guys can find me at Instagram. It's just Mary Margaret Overby, mary.margaret.overby. So that's where I need to post.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. And I'm so excited for you and everything that you're doing as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Women Who Roar podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm on a mission to help protect women from toxic relationships by supporting them and recognizing the signs. I also want to help women heal from toxic relationships by letting them know they are not alone. The stories and conversations I share on this platform and in my book, Losing You, Finding Me, are designed to do just that. I'd love for you to help spread this mission by subscribing to this podcast, leaving a review, and sharing it with a friend. Also consider picking up a copy of Losing You, Finding Me for a deep dive into healing from trauma and toxic relationships. Until next week.